The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
I saw the end of the world. I could feel all this death.
Jean, it was just a dream.
You wander through the willows in the forest you have found.
I've been called many things over many lifetimes.
Trying to hide.
Ra, Krishna, Yahweh.
Ever since the world found out about mutants, there have been secret societies who see them as some kind of second coming or sign of God. They believe that tens of thousands of years ago, an ancient being was born, the world's first.
Mutant.
You are all my children. And you're lost because you follow blind leaders. But I am here now. I'm here for you.
That's an excerpt from the trailer for the movie X-Men Apocalypse. Obviously, some religious overtones at work in this latest film, following mutants through the world of ordinary people like you and me. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. Live on this Thursday afternoon, June the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be reviewing the movie X-Men Apocalypse. Pastor Ted Gacy will be our guest. Then Terry Mattingly joins us. We're going to talk about media coverage of Baylor University, Christian education, and collegiate sports. Baylor University is one of almost 200 colleges or universities that are dealing with the issue of sexual assault. Baylor's story is a little different, and it's being covered a little different as well. Terry will tell us about that a little bit later. Then it's our series, Christ in the Old Testament. Today we'll be in Psalm 30. Joy comes with the morning. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or comments as well. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet, @issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us for a review of the movie X-Men Apocalypse, Pastor Ted Gacy. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
This latest installment of the X-Men series has religious overtones, also attempts, at least in the world of X-Men, to explain the origins of religion. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's one of the aspects of this film, and as we heard in the trailer that played at the beginning of the segment here, you get the voice of a lady, and that is an actress named Rose Bryan, who plays a CIA agent, and she's kind of giving a rundown of this. You know, like tens of thousands of years ago, there was this person born, and he was a mutant, and people worshipped him like a god, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you get that in a bit of exposition through the film. Also, the opening prologue of the film is set in ancient Egypt, about 3,500 BC, something like that. So it's all pyramids and everything, and he's being worshipped, this character Apocalypse, who is the central character in terms of the villain for this movie, X-Men Apocalypse. That's where the name came from for this. And the idea is that through time he's been worshipped as a god. This lines up a lot like a book that was popular in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s by Eric von Däniken called Chariots of the Gods, in which the suggestion is that aliens from outer space interacted with humans, the dense, primitive minds of humans. This shows a little bit of intellectual snobbery of the modern mind, looked back at saw all these things, and they were like baffled, and they started worshiping them as gods. It also looks a lot like, you know, movies like Stargate or the TV shows that respond from it, Stargate, SG-1, stuff like that. This idea that the dense humans were interacting with alien life forms and thereby then attributed godhood to them. And in this case, in the world of the X-Men mutants, it's not really an alien from outer space. It's just a very powerful mutated human being with these extra special superpowers that has been deemed to be a god, and he's taken advantage of it. And he's kind of, as a character, this Apocalypse, played by Isaac, Oscar Isaac, he's kind of almost like a Darwinian kind of guy. Like, he has this idea of survival of the fittest. So his whole thing is the weak should fail and the strong should survive. So as the real quote-unquote force behind religions, he's the one that's kind of forcing these religious groups through history to fight with each other to find out who gets to be the most dominant ones to pass on into the future.
So how does this fit within the storyline? Because this is kind of teen mutants, these ones. They're not as teen as they were in the first couple movies, but we made a couple X-Men movies with an older cast. Then they recast them as younger people, kind of telling their backstory. Where does this fit in all of that?
Yeah, you know, if you're trying to keep track of this, it's getting a little complicated because there's a lot of these movies. And, like, for instance, the character of Wolverine, played by Hugh Jackman, has kind of always been the same age. So he shows up as a cameo in this, and he looks like the Wolverine that people have seen in other films. But yes, you've got this younger cast. So this is really the third film in the kind of sort of a reboot, you know, where it started with X-Men First Class, where you go back to the beginnings of the character of Charles Xavier starting his school for mutants and giving them a place to come and live, and his relationship with this character named Magneto, who is mostly a villain but sometimes helps, kind of a deal. And so that was X-Men First Class, and then you have this other movie, Days of Future Past, which was the previous one, which deals with time travel, and now you kind of zip back to early 1980s, and you're with some of these same young people now, just a little bit older, and some other young people. They're always introducing new characters and new mutants, different mutants into the mix. It's a ginormous cast of characters, and it's sometimes hard to keep all of it straight, but that's what they're doing. This is where this fits. It's kind of set in 1980s, early 1980s, 1983, and it's part of this kind of sort of new reboot showing the earlier life of these characters.
Now, my sense from the first couple films with the older cast that were made is that there was at the time, I think there was kind of a strong preachy subtext to those films about how mutants are essentially, I think they were proxies for the LGBT movement, to tell you the truth, in the first couple films. And that they're these misunderstood special people that we really ought to be, you know, embracing as a society. Instead, we marginalize them or fear them or something like that. I don't know if you had the same sense, but you can hardly watch the first couple films without saying, all right, I think I know what they're saying here.
Yeah,
does that come across in these?
Yes. In this particular movie, I think what they're getting at is a little different. But as a whole, this entire series is certainly in that particular ballpark, like what you're talking about. So it's always been, and even the comic books prior to these movies, are focusing in on the idea of discrimination. And in particular, like, maybe not the whole LGBTQ, and then whatever other numbers to add or letters to add at the end of that, as we've got now, but certainly the gay and lesbian community in the past. Also just general discrimination against people of different races, because these comic books started in the late 60s and in, like, quite a ways back. Also, in the early 80s, they were dealing with, like, discrimination against people who have AIDS. So these kind of things all kind of worked out in the comic books, and they certainly all show up in the movies. This one is less interested in that. And interestingly, I think, more interested in some of the family dynamics of various kinds that could be had. So when you're watching the movie, it seems like it's going to all be completely about, quote-unquote, apocalypse, the end of the world. And yet, at the end of the world, you've got kind of three different tiers of family focused on the idea of fatherhood, which really is the actual story of the movie, even though they have, like, you know, a race to stop the guy who's going to destroy the world, and as might be imagined, they stop the destruction of the world. But underlying all of that is this other thing, and it's really less about the discrimination angle and more about their life together as mutants.
That's been another theme there, and that is many of the mutants in the storyline are rejected by their own families. And they find new family, you know, not a new family, but new family ties within the community. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the three different kind of families that are presented, one is kind of maybe in the vein of like a religious kind of family. We can talk about that in a second. But the one that you're talking about is the second of them, which is Charles Xavier, Professor X, and his school for the, you know, young people. So gifted school for the gifted youngsters, you know, that he's put together. That's kind of like an institutional fatherhood, kind of like being adopted into a family. The we're all in it together kind of a family thing, and that theme runs through all of the movies, but it's here in this one as well, and they're always having new people adopted into it, and this character of Professor X, played by James McAvoy in this film, he is like a surrogate father, so there's that one element. The religious element is this apocalypse who is one who claims godhood. Like he, for all intents and purposes, he's like a god. He speaks of himself as though he's a god. He is over and over again through the film deemed to be a false god, but he's very paternalistic. He refers to all of the mutants as his children, and he's come to take care of them, and he wants to make a better world for them. So when he calls them into his life, then he's making them part of this kind of religious family where he's like God the Father, but really this is a First Commandment related, kind of breaking the First Commandment related issue, and he is a false god. And then the real emotional center of the film is actually the nuclear family. So a real honest-to-goodness mother and father and a child, and that's the character of Magneto, who has, after the things that happened in the X-Men First Class, he's given up on his special abilities, gone off to start a life for himself, got married, had a kid, everything's going well, and then his wife and child die. And in the midst of that, like Job, he, you know, calls out into the heavens. He's a Jewish character, and he calls out into the heavens, you know, to God, saying, is this what you want of me? Would you rather have me, basically, saying, would you rather have me be a villain than a man with a family and a life? But there's this fatherhood story for him as well, and it's really the emotional heart of the film.
Is he, I know you mentioned just a moment ago that the Magneto character is kind of vacillates between villain and hero, even within the course of one movie. Which is he in this one?
Mostly, well, he's kind of a villain in that when he calls out to the sky, to God, really, actually, and says, is this what you want of me? He then just gives up on everything and joins Apocalypse and becomes one of Apocalypse's four horsemen. So you see again that they're kind of grabbing from Scripture. This is kind of more veneer in that particular case, where they're grabbing stuff from Scripture in that way. But he becomes one of the four horsemen of Apocalypse, and he's ostensibly a villain through most of the film in that way. But there is this underlying pain and suffering that he's experiencing because of the loss of his opportunity to be a father to this little daughter of his, that has the audience maybe more empathetic towards him. So you have a little bit of rehabilitation of the villain in that case, maybe a little what they call sympathy for the devil kind of a deal. The very interesting part of all of that is that he has another child that he's somewhat unaware of. He doesn't really know that this person's out there, it seems like. And in the film, it's this character, Quicksilver, who's actually been in other Marvel movies played by different actors. But in this particular one, Quicksilver, he is Magneto's son, and he wants to tell Magneto that I'm your son. And then here's the spoiler. It doesn't get resolved. He has opportunities to do it. It doesn't get resolved. So the character of Quicksilver becomes the potential of redemption for Magneto to come back towards being a real father. And that's kind of, I think, maybe a more interesting element of the film.
Folks, if you have a question or a comment about X-Men Apocalypse or any of the previous X-Men movies, our call-in number live this Thursday afternoon, the 2nd of June, is 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email as well. We get that in real time right here in the studio. talkback@issuesetc.org or a tweet at @issuesetc. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie X-Men Apocalypse.
Like we always do.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
If you're going to a Lutheran church, you should be hearing the name of Jesus more than the name of Martin Luther.
Pastor Trevor Sutton, author of the book Being Lutheran.
And I think that's really what Martin Luther would want. He made it quite clear that this faith is not to be based on him, but is to be based on Christ alone.
You can purchase Being Lutheran at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Being Lutheran, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie X-Men Apocalypse. Ted, I want to I get kind of some general questions here having to do, you mentioned this is another one of the movies made in the Marvel Universe. Refresh our memory, there are other movies made in the Marvel Universe as well. What would they be?
Well, we have a whole pile of them, and we've had a couple actually this year. So, like earlier in the year, there was Deadpool, which was, decidedly made for an adult audience. And that one is kind of fits in with this particular stream of the Marvel Universe. But also just earlier, the last one we reviewed before this one was Captain America Civil War. And Captain America Civil War and the Avengers films and Ant-Man, movies like that, they're all actually made by Marvel Studios. And so you have different companies who have franchise rights on certain characters. That's why you don't always have crossovers with the different actors playing the same part. Sony has some of them. Fox has others. This is a Fox one. And then Disney owns Marvel Studios. So there's just a plethora of these films out there right now to see. And it's kind of interesting to see this big meta-narrative developing and where they do cooperate with each other and where they don't, and where they dovetail together and where they don't. So this is kind of an interesting thing.
Is there, I mean, you've watched a lot of these. Is there any detectable coordination toward one gigantic super movie at some point?
Well, they are planning something like that. But not necessarily between the different companies like Fox and Sony and Marvel. So Disney with Marvel Studios is working towards something called it's the Infinity Gauntlet storyline. So it's the Infinity Wars 1 and 2. They're going to be called, and from what I hear, every single character that Marvel Studios has introduced and has rights to, all of them are going to be in those movies. So if it seems like there's like a lot of people to keep track of, a lot of characters, a lot of storylines and things, I'm curious as to see how well they do with those two movies when they finally come out. And they're not going to come out until 2018, 2019 or something like that. So a ways off from now. This one has so many characters, so many storylines, that it feels like X-Men Apocalypse feels like it's just about ready to cave in on itself, like under the weight of its own epic ambitions. These stories are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So is it good storytelling? You know, it really takes a deft hand and a really good script writer to balance all of it out. So there are some clunky elements of this particular film.
I get that sense with the other Marvel films as well. I mean, you got the films that are apparently dedicated to one character, Captain America or Iron Man or something like that. But sometimes they just are tossing characters in there and trying to tell their stories too, gets in the way of the overall enjoyability of the film.
Yeah, in this movie you get Jennifer Lawrence playing a character called Mystique. And, of course, Jennifer Lawrence is very popular because of the Hunger Games movies and some of her other work. And she's in there, and, like, to me personally, as I watched the movie, I was like, they could have taken that entire character out and the movie would have been fine. It felt like she was lost in the whole shuffle of everything. They could have taken a different character and had almost everything done that she did. So sometimes the question is more better or is less more? And in this particular film, I think less could have been more, because some of these themes of fatherhood, like I was talking about, I think could have came through better in the film if the film had been a little more succinct and streamlined and maybe 20 minutes shorter.
You also watched Alice Through the Looking Glass last weekend. You haven't written a review yet, but what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll have time to write a review for it, but let's talk about it because I think there's some interesting things here. It kind of got clobbered by X-Men Apocalypse in the theater. It has not made a whole bunch of money. X-Men Apocalypse is making all the money. And maybe that's because Johnny Depp is in the news and it's not good news for him in the current situation or as it's being reported. But the movie, I think, suffers from, and it's interesting because it's a little bit like this for X-Men Apocalypse. You watch the trailers, and you seem to think that it's going to be about one thing, and then both of these movies turn out to be about something else. So X-Men Apocalypse has all of this themes of fatherhood in it, which doesn't really come out in the trailers at all. And then Alice Through the Looking Glass has all of this storyline about family and family relationships. So in that film, we've got like the Alice in Wonderland kind of stuff. Now this one is called Alice Through the Looking Glass. It's not really like the actual book by Lewis Carroll or the story by Lewis Carroll called Alice Through the Looking Glass. Very few things taken from that. But what you do get is a story about Alice going back into Wonderland to help some of the characters resolve some family issues using time travel. And time is a character in it, played by Sacha Baron Cohen. And time starts out as a villain. She refers to him as a villain and a thief. But by the end of it, she has a better appreciation for time and sees that it gives before it takes, as she puts it in the movie. But with the family elements, I think, which are really interesting, is you have the Queen of Hearts and her sister, and there's a real need for forgiveness, and then there's actually a satisfying conclusion that includes forgiveness where the one actually says to the other, forgive me, please forgive me. And it isn't the one you'd think. The one who needs to give the forgiveness, the one who's been wronged, is the Queen of Hearts, which makes for a really interesting story. The other part of it is the Mad Hatter, whose father has issues with his father. He thinks that his father doesn't love him, but it turns out through the unfolding of the story that his father actually did love him very much, and they were able to have a happy reunion. The father, who was believed to be dead, is actually not dead. So think the reversal of the prodigal son, where you now have a father who was he'd thought that he was dead, but now is alive, and had been alive the whole time, and there's a reconciliation there. So a really strong movie about forgiveness within families, which I think is unusual. Like, it's not what you'd expect and not what you don't get that from the trailer. Plus, another interesting thing is, of course, Alice being the hero. Alice is going to resolve all of the conflict and has to do the heroic task. But in the heroic task, she fails, like an inch from her goal. And then there is somewhat ambiguous, but for certain, an external force that actually saves the day. So it's not really Alice who accomplishes the heroic act. Something from outside does it. And I think that's kind of an interesting element to find in the midst of the film as well.
So with about a minute on that Alice Through the Looking Glass, if you expect to go in and see, you know, a very well done CGI version with big names of Through the Looking Glass, you're going to be disappointed. But if you go in without those expectations, there's something there.
Yeah, you might be pleasantly surprised. And if you were going to take, like, let's say you're going to take a younger person to a movie, you know, you could take them to X-Men Apocalypse, or you could take them to Alice Through the Looking Glass. But Alice Through the Looking Glass might actually be the better movie, even though it's not performing as well in the theater, in terms of, like, a good, solid story about forgiveness within family, appreciating family members in the time that you have with them, and pointing towards, you know, a happy reunion and a love within a family. So, for my money, there you go.
Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church, Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of X-Men Apocalypse at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about media coverage of Baylor University, its attempts, continuing attempts at something resembling a Christian education, and collegiate sports, the sexual assault scandals that surround not only Baylor, but other schools. Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate will be our guest.
The There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore, thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Now, if you appreciate Issues Etc., please consider making a tax-deductible gift today. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.